Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Every time that Don Rue there refers to me as founding editor, reminds me, it makes me feel so self-important. Like, ooh, founding editor. That just means I was around at the creation. And it's my baby, Up North News, which you find at upnorthnewswi.com. And there's a newsletter that I crank out every afternoon where we try to give you three things you need to know about Wisconsin news. Two of them are fairly newsy. One of them is more featurey. We also have Christina Lori's new daily feature called Uplifting, and it allows us to highlight some other good news that's happening that you may not have seen as it was covered elsewhere. We always include a new photo every day of something beautiful around Wisconsin, because so many people have been sending us their photos to photos at upnorthnewswi.com. You can also reach us at radio at upnorthnewswi.com. And we always conclude with what I refer to as a Twitter kicker. It's called One Last Thing. And it's usually a funny or a sharp or a poignant tweet from somebody. It's kind of the Twitter, the modern age editorial cartoon, I guess, is probably the best way that I'd put it, by somebody saying something that will make you think or will make you laugh. And if you'd like to sign up for that newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com, up in the top banner there, click on newsletter and join tens of thousands of your friends and neighbors in joining us there. You can also like us on Facebook and join tens of thousands of your friends following us there, or follow us on Instagram and join the 5 or 6 people, I believe, who follow us on Instagram. I really need to step up my Instagram game.
I'm not there with you on that one either. I prefer Twitter. And so there's a lot of people I know that are like, oh no, Instagram's like the best social media. That's where you got to be. And I'm just like, no, I guess I also just don't take photos. I take a bunch of photos, but then I never know, like, is it fine to post them after the fact? Because I feel like everybody's constantly posting like in the moment, and they're doing like these live stories and stuff, but then I like several weeks go by and I'm like, oh, I should have posted that on Instagram, but I forgot. And it's like, is it outdated? I don't know.
Well, we have had a strategy here at Courier Newsroom and Up North News to do much more on Instagram. And you know, to be fair, we actually have. We've increased to something like, I think it's 7,000 followers, and we try to make graphics or photos or other things that bring news stories to life, so that while people are scrolling through Instagram, yeah, they're seeing videos, they're seeing reels, they're seeing some funny stuff, they're seeing some poignant stuff, but we also want them to be informed while they're scrolling. So we do try to, what's known as stop the scroll, and get them to pause long enough to, you know, read a visual version of our news stories. And then we'd like to continue to increase the amount of video clips that we put on Instagram and TikTok. And I received what could only be called a real symbolic kick in the pants yesterday from our sister publication, Iowa Starting Line. And their editor, whose name is also Patrick, is a longtime dyed-in-the-wool journalist, just like some other cranky person you might listen to on the radio. However, he and his team have most definitely done a better job of stepping up their Instagram and TikTok game with short videos. And so I would direct you, just as a sample, if you want to see, when you say, how can a news outlet, you know, be on Instagram or on TikTok? Follow them, either search for Iowa Starting Line, or I believe their handle is IA Starting Line, and go take a look, because I'm going to, after looking at their stuff last night, I'm going to show that to my team and say, hey, we need to do more of this. Everything from, again, just features at the Iowa State Fair to clips of what their Senator Charles Grassley said at a town hall. So there is definitely room for digital newsrooms to expand into more areas, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, what have you. Some things, though, just seem to sound better in spoken word, which is what I'm going to do now. When I mentioned that Republican candidate for governor, Tim Michaels, has had a lot of flip-flops lately, this next one is a real doozy. Again, this is somebody who sought Donald Trump's endorsement, pulled it down from his website the day after he won the primary, put it back up within minutes of it having been reported. He's flip-flopped on what to do about the election commission in Wisconsin. During the primary, Tim Michaels emphasized that he was not going to accept donations from any individual of more than $500, a $500 limit, unheard of. But as Dan Bice from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported, and in something else that was also noted by Patrick Marley, now of the Washington Post, that limit has very quietly gone away, and that now the Michaels campaign will take donations up to the maximum of $20,000. I don't know how many of you have written a $20,000 campaign contribution. I have to acknowledge I'm not one of them. But again, it's one thing when you're putting in $10 million of your own money to win in a primary. It's really something how your values and your promises change once you've been able to survive the primary and move on to the next round of the campaign. That's Tim Michaels' latest flip-flop. More about that a little later on. More news up next. You're up north. Luke, I have one concern thinking back to what State Representative Christina Shelton said about school lunches and improving access to them and how it also enhances the farm-to-table aspect, helping Wisconsin farmers get nutritious food to schools. I realize I didn't ask her, can we make sure that that doesn't include zucchini? Because I think we're at that time of year now where, I mean, if you don't pay attention, some neighbor could leave a bag of zucchini on your front step and then... You know, what are you supposed to do with that? Can we not do that to the
school
welcome
children? It. I welcome the zucchini. Please send me your zucchini. I will take any extra zucchini that you have. I was busy with other home projects this year, so therefore a garden was not at the top of the list. I do not have any of my own zucchini. I will take any zucchini that Pat is trying to besmirch right now because it is delicious. I had zucchini bread for breakfast this morning, and I will not stand for you telling me zucchini is not great and the overflowing of these children can have zucchini in their school lunches.
Stop the tape right there. That is what we're going to edit. That is part one. Because, folks, it is now on you to make sure that part two of this video. Have more than I could possibly handle. Send the zucchini to Luke. Will, I don't want to, you know, give away addresses yet, but prepare your zucchini, ladies and gentlemen. Luke said it. He said it. We got the video. He wants your zucchini.
Go to civicmedia.us. It is the website for Civic Media. We have a studio address on there. You can send zucchini to me and I will eat it because it's delicious. It's delicious. And I don't have nearly enough this year because I don't have a garden.
Sometimes I just don't think we can be further apart, and then you tell me that you're a fan of that demon vegetable.
What is your problem with zucchini or summer squash? What is your problem?
Does tastes gross count as a reason? Or
see, you're over here making fun of me for celebrating my half birthday, but you've got a childish appetite when it comes to zucchini. Then, if you're telling me it tastes gross. What? You grill it up, you can put it in pasta, there's so many different things you can do with zucchini.
What if I don't want my pasta to taste like a gym sock, though?
It doesn't
taste
like a gym sock.
It's one of those things that if you know, like cauliflower and so many other things, you have to season the bejesus out of it to have it taste anything close to decent.
A little salt and pepper and maybe something like paprika or some cayenne if you're feeling spicy, like that's all you need. You don't need to soak it with your gym socks, Pat. That's the wrong way to cook the zucchini.
apparently I learned wrong. My poor grandmother, God rest her soul, taught me wrong how to prepare zucchini. So keep that in mind. Maybe this week when I'm there, or maybe sometime in the future, you will prepare zucchini for me the way that apparently the good Lord intended it to be served. And we'll see if we can make a zucchini lover out of me. But for now, my position stands: don't do that to kids' school lunches. It's just, think of the children, people. Think of the children. Time for the good news portion of our visit today. And there's a lot of it out there. This has been an unusual political cycle for many reasons, obviously. We don't have to go into all of them. But one of the things that comes out in polling, at least my observation, and I think others have as well, is the relatively high number of people who, on the one hand, say, I'm doing well. My household is doing well. You know, things seem to be going well for me. But I have extremely negative feelings about the world beyond, either the national economy or the right track, wrong track, or anything like that. People think the world is kind of in this doom and gloom scenario. And one of those things is this continued drumbeat of a recession that's just around the corner, when all indications are that the economy bounced back off the pandemic. That bounce back, of course, included inflation, because it's going to when you disrupt supply and demand the way that it does. But that as you get that inflation back under control, as you calm the supply chains, that Americans, when you look at their household income and whether it's keeping up with inflation, are actually doing by and large a lot better than the political rhetoric that's out there. Washington Monthly has a new breakdown of it, and I'm going to actually open with their close of the article. They say, imagine how Donald Trump would brag if he could tout record job creation, record low poverty, record health insurance coverage, not to mention wealth gains and wage and salary gains that kept up with inflation. That's the message Democrats should carry into the fall campaign. And I understand that Representative Shelton, when we spoke earlier, said that she was hearing these economic concerns at the doors. And again, when that's all you hear from certain political wings and media wings, you start to believe it. But then you look at the numbers, and the numbers tell you, for example, more than 9.5 million unemployed Americans found jobs over the past 18 months. The unemployment rate is down to 3.5%. Americans' incomes are higher. It is always complicated trying to figure out the balance between income and inflation. And this article, without going into the details, looks at all the different ways that you can measure that. And when you look at the overall gains, the fact is in June of 2022, the average working American earned $74,643 in wages and salaries, compared to $74,624 in January of 2021. And that's noteworthy, because even with 9.5 million more people working, the average working person earned as much in June after inflation as when Biden took office. So wages weren't suppressed. And Americans, from an overall standpoint, are doing a pretty good job of keeping up with inflation. These statistics rule out the top 1%, which I think is especially noteworthy. They note that if you fold in the top 1%, the wealthiest, it really skews the numbers, because they make that much more money because our tax system is so out of whack. But net assets are up. The poverty rate, which reached 16% at the end of 2020, has fallen to 14% by this summer. On healthcare coverage, the percentage of uninsured Americans has fallen to 3.7% among children, and among all Americans, among all adults, down to 12%. These are both record low numbers for people who do not have health insurance. And imagine how much better those numbers could be in Wisconsin if legislators had expanded Badger Care by accepting the $1 billion or so that they have waived that was offered by the federal government. From a macroeconomic standpoint, U.S. companies are on pace to bring home a record number of jobs that were overseas. Nearly 350,000 jobs will come back this year from other countries, according to a report by the Reshoring Initiative, as quoted in the Wall Street Journal. That would be the highest number since the group began tracking data in 2010. Over the past, just the past month, the journal notes, dozens of companies have said they plan to build new factories or start new manufacturing projects in the U.S. They note all the reasons, including not wanting to go through such supply chain disruptions anymore. The Chinese government not exactly being on its best behavior lately. And of course, we know how Russia has really thrown a wrench into global exports and the global economy overall. So more companies, much like they invest in the full faith and credit of the U.S. government by, you know, by putting their money in, you know, U.S. banks or U.S. securities or U.S. bonds, what have you. Now they're realizing they need to do the same with some of their hard assets. And that's putting more jobs and especially more manufacturing back here. Now, that manufacturing and all those extra jobs could certainly lead to one concern. What happens now that the U.S. Supreme Court, again, now controlled by what can only be described as right-wing justices, has severely restricted the ability of the Environmental Protection Agency to fight climate change? The court had said the reason they made this ruling is that Congress never granted the EPA the broad authority to shift America away from burning fossil fuels. But as Lisa Friedman writes in the New York Times, now it has. If you take a close look at the Inflation Reduction Act, which recently passed, there is language written in there specifically to address the Supreme Court's justification for reining in the EPA, she writes. The new law amends the Clean Air Act to define the carbon dioxide produced by the burning of fossil fuels as an air pollutant. And that language explicitly gives the EPA the authority to regulate greenhouse gases and use its power to push the adoption of wind, solar, and other renewable energy sources. And that says a lot, because when people hear about bills that are written by and passed by Democrats, they tend to think that this is some kind of a wish list, that there's not a lot of thought that goes into, you know, what, how the policy will actually work, how it will withstand court challenges and whatnot. And this article really makes the point that in forming the Inflation Reduction Act, there was, in fact, a lot of thought given to the exact language, making sure that it could withstand challenges, especially based on what this Supreme Court is capable of doing. Now, here's the thing that I found fascinating. Obviously, this passed with no Republican votes. That it passed out of the Senate 51-50 with Vice President Kamala Harris casting the tie-breaking vote. And Republicans like Senator Ted Cruz of Texas said that kind of language, giving the EPA the authority to fight climate change, he's quoted in the New York Times as saying, it's buried in there. The Democrats are trying to overturn the Supreme Court's West Virginia versus EPA victory. Said the guy who's rejoicing that the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and abortion rights. So what makes him think that overturning what the Supreme Court says, especially when the Supreme Court gives you a roadmap, says, here's why you can't do this, and then you address it, seems fair play to me.
That's not overturning. That's doing exactly how the system of checks and balances and separation of powers is supposed to work. The just because you lose and get rerouted in politics, I'm sorry, that's not overturning. You just lost.
That's exactly it. And that's what these elections are about. And look, yes, it took forever for this to pass. It felt like getting Joe Manchin on board, getting Kyrsten Sinema on board. It is definitely not everything that Joe Biden or, you know, for people further to the left of him would like to see. But it's these incremental victories that mark how government's supposed to work through the right process and truly get things done. Let's take a break. More after this. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I was stranded in the bed. You were listening to the dark side.
If you stay on top of what I would call modern music, rock and roll, I think the kids call it, this is also the same song we played in the last segment, but we only heard the very beginning and the very end. And Luke promises me that this is an example of a song in the year of our Lord 2022 that I would like. Who is this, Luke?
Well, this is the Lumineers, and this is off their new album, and it's very good. And you recommended a Lumineers song earlier today, so I thought you might like it.
I was aware of the song "Hey Ho," and I can kind of hear them saying it in the background if you listen carefully, because I feel like that's every one of their songs has got to say that now. That's their shtick, right? But
I don't know about that, but it's a quality album, and I like this single off of it. And I believe the album's called Brightside, so this is the namesake single off the album, and it's very good, and I recommend it.
All right, there you go. Something for me to try to
little homework for you, Pat.
Little homework for me. Maybe try to finally figure out Spotify and see if I can do that, because you can listen to us as a podcast on Spotify or Apple, or maybe some of the other usual places, but you can also listen to us live on the TuneIn app or tunein.com and just search for WXCO. WXCO Bull Falls Radio is our flagship station in Wausau, where we're very happy to be coming to you every morning from 8 to 11. In our last segment, we talked about some good news, the ways that the economy has indeed been improving and the way that policy is being written in a way that actually puts people first. Let's go to the flip side of that now and talk about the big money that is being poured in on the Republican side and the way that it's being spent and what it might mean for things ranging from election campaigns to, frankly, our national security. First, the overview, and this is only for the nerds, and my apologies if you're not one of them. But I really appreciate how there's a group, For What It's Worth, or FWIW. They put together a newsletter that tracks digital spending, not the spending on TV commercials, not the spending on political mail pieces, but the spending on Google, on Facebook, you know, all of the internet platforms. And what they've noticed is that Republicans have really started to slip lately. For quite a while in cycles past, they had the money to spend and they spent it online. But now you're seeing that Democratic candidates in competitive Senate, House, and gubernatorial contests are outspending their Republican opponents. Now, it's not just candidates and it's not just campaigns. I mean, if you look at the top political ad spenders on Facebook platforms, you know, Facebook and Instagram for the most recent week that was measured, the week of August 7th, the number one political ad spender is actually Big Pharma. The big pharmaceutical companies are number one on the list with their political ads, which wrap themselves up in, you know, all Americana, to say we are as good as mom and apple pie. So don't let that nasty Congress of Democrats regulate us and keep us from trying to maximize our profit at your expense. So pharma was number one. The conservative site, The Daily Wire, was actually number two. The conservative, the right-wing group, Americans for Prosperity, was number three. Number four was Georgia Democratic Senate candidate Raphael Warnock. And then also on that list of top spenders in the country, Democratic Senate candidate Mark Kelly of Arizona, I should say Senator Mark Kelly, Democratic Senate candidate from Florida, Val Demings, and Democratic gubernatorial candidate in Texas, Beto O'Rourke, all in the top 10 spending, which I'm sure a lot of that is spending money to make money, to get more ads so that they can more closely target the voters in their own state. But if now, if you look on just Google platforms, the top spender is something called California for Solutions. It's listed as nonpartisan. Number two spender on all Google platforms, the Republican Party of Florida. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is also in the top five list. So they clearly know that their voters, who are somewhere in their mid-90s typically, are using their Google machines and asking, you know, how many batters did Satchel Paige strike out last night? Which is still one of the greatest SNL skits ever. When we talked about Alexa and the smart speakers, Luke, I know you've seen this one.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, of course. SNL is a big I've always appreciated the comedy, and so I love especially that one, and there's just a handful of classic ones that you can always just go and if you're feeling blue, you can go search an SNL skit, and YouTube's a terrific thing for that, or Google, since we're talking about acronyming Google and for what it's worth. You can search on those sites and get those great little videos for a laugh when you're not thinking about the political campaign spends for these organizations.
Yeah, when you need a break. In a somewhat related note, bringing it closer to Wisconsin, we have been talking about Wisconsin Truth PAC, which is a group backing Senator Ron Johnson.
Did they make the list?
No, they're not on this list, but I wanted to make sure I reinforced the point that so far, and this is according to Michael Best Strategies, the lobbying firm put out a summary this week, noting that Wisconsin Truth PAC has added another $1.4 million to its expenditures in ads that are specifically targeting Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, Johnson's opponent, with these scary images of non-white people. But it notes that so far in 2022, the group Wisconsin Truth PAC has spent $10.7 million. And don't be fooled when you see anything from Wisconsin Truth PAC of thinking, oh, this is a whole bunch of Ron Johnson supporters. These are sweet old ladies, you know, writing checks for $30 and sending it in. No. Again, keep in mind, they have spent $10.7 million. The group has received $6.5 billion from billionaire Diane Hendricks, and $3.5 million. Did I say billion? I meant million. So they've, out of the $10.7 million spent, $6.5 million from billionaire Diane Hendricks, and $3.5 million from billionaires Liz and Dick Uihlein. And if you add that up, that comes to $10 million. So the vast majority of what Wisconsin Truth PAC is, with the many, many ads that $10 million can buy, is coming from two households with billionaires who, as we've outlined previously, received tens upon tens of millions of dollars from Senator Ron Johnson through a sweetheart tax deal that exposed less of their tremendous income to tax liability, meaning you and I had to make it all up. But the fundraising does still go on off of sweet old ladies writing $30 checks and all the rest of us out there who choose to support candidates or causes. You are aware of the FBI search warrant at Mar-a-Lago. You may not be aware that in criticizing it and in sending out wave after wave of emails, former President Donald Trump has made millions off of this. The Washington Post reports that contributions to Trump's Political Action Committee topped $1 million a day on at least 2 days after the August 8th search of his estate, according to two people familiar with the figures. The donations have stayed high for several days. And let's see, the former president's PAC brought in, you know, $36 million alone in the first half of this year. It's a cash bonanza that provides a sign that Trump continues to reap political benefits as he sends out a wave of emails with bold capital, all capital lines like, they broke into my home and they're coming after you. And then there's always the promise of a match, a common tactic used to encourage people to respond immediately. But it's never quite clear if that match is something that's an actual thing. Since leaving office, Trump has raised more than $100 million for his PAC, often, the Post notes, with misleading pitches, but has kept most of the money. He's often said that it was going to go toward all of the legal cases against him and such, but the Post notes, he's only been spending big on a handful of other election races, paying for some staff and legal fees and travel. He has apparently reportedly told advisors he wants to keep the money as it shows political strength. And if that sounds familiar to you, I would again refer you to the legislative Republicans here in Wisconsin who are sitting on a $5 billion state surplus of your money. By sitting on a pile of money, they think it shows strength, when in fact, it just means that they, like Trump, are willing to take your money, sit on it till they feel like nobody's looking, and use it not for what they're promising you, but for whatever it is they want to. I wish that were enough, but it's not. A new story from the New York Times has the headline, an unusual $1.6 billion donation bolsters conservatives. And this time I did not mix up my millions and billions. $1.6 billion. A new conservative nonprofit group. I love how they're called a nonprofit.
Yeah.
Scored a one point. Yeah.
How does it get to classified as a nonprofit? This is a wild story.
I know. They scored a $1.6 billion windfall last year via a little-known donor, an extraordinary sum that could give Republicans and their causes a huge financial boost ahead of the midterm and for years to come. The source of the money was Barry Side, an electronics manufacturing mogul, and it may be the largest single contribution ever to a politically focused nonprofit. It's going to a group controlled by Leonard Leo, an activist who uses his connection to Republican donors and politicians to engineer the conservative dominance of the Supreme Court and to finance battles over abortion rights, voting rules, and climate change. Now, can you just write out a check for $1.6 billion? Even if you could, maybe that's something you could try to regulate, although again, with money being equal to free speech in the eyes of the Supreme Court, that's rather difficult. But this wasn't a single check that was written. And the way they get there is what really ruffles feathers. This cash infusion, because again, not a single check, this cash infusion, the Times writes, was arranged through an unusual series of transactions that appear to have avoided tax liabilities. There it is again. You know, taxes are just for the little people, for what they pay. It originated with Mr. Side, a longtime conservative donor, who made a fortune as the chair and chief executive of an electrical device manufacturing company known as Trip Light. Rather than merely giving cash, Mr. Side donated 100% of the shares of Trip Light to Leo's nonprofit group before the company was sold to an Irish conglomerate for $1.65 billion, according to tax records. The nonprofit then received all of the proceeds from the sale, a transaction that appears to have been structured to allow the nonprofit group and Mr. Side to avoid paying taxes on the proceeds. Look, we're never going to get, for all the talk of we should turn the tax code into something where a 1040 is the size of a postcard, that was never going to happen. But again, we can't let this kind of complexity go unaddressed. And not only will it go unaddressed if this $1.6 billion allows the right wing to maintain control, it will only get worse I mean, we were barely able to find, thanks to some very good reporters looking through all kinds of tax records, what we know now. Imagine how much more difficult it would be to not know who is talking to you. Whatever other independent group it may be, wouldn't it be better if you heard directly just from the candidates themselves? I'm Pat Kreitlow, and I approve this message. And we'll wrap up this hour after this. I've been trying so hard to make heads or tails, try to find the perfect weather map out there to better explain what Wisconsin weather is like on a daily basis. And all I can tell you is, based on the little green splotches that I'm finding on some of these maps, you've got a pretty fair chance of rain in the far northern parts of the state, whereas high pressure is allowing the days to be nicer in the southern two-thirds of the state for today, at least until tomorrow. And then starting tomorrow, a frontal system will start to drop through and increase that chance of rain for Wednesday and or Thursday, depending on where you are. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is here as well. Brewers were winners over the Dodgers. Blank the Dodgers. 4-0. And then do that again tonight.
Which yeah, very nice. Hopefully they do it again tonight. But I believe it was the Dodgers that blanked the Crew at home 4-0 to start the series that we split at AmFam Fields just a week ago. So it was kind of a little payback.
And a split would be, I mean, obviously you want the sweep, but if they could win 2 of 3 here to undo the damage from losing 2 of 3 in Chicago this past weekend, that would help. Then we take on the Cubs again this coming weekend, and maybe St. Louis could start to not win every day. Would be rather
it'd be ideal. Yeah, we'd like that. We would say thank you.
Yes, we would. We would say thank you. I was looking earlier at in what I called the good news segment of our hour, talking about things that are currently good about the economy and the improvements that have been made. And we have spoken before about the benefits coming in the Inflation Reduction Act, specifically for Wisconsin. And in many ways, we kind of spoke in generalities. And now there's a group, the Evergreen Collaborative, and they are obviously a group that is supportive of efforts to fight climate change. And they have looked at some of the numbers, and they've come up with state-by-state reports on how the Inflation Reduction Act has climate provisions that would benefit, in this case, Wisconsinites, in the effort to deploy more renewable energy and accelerate the transition to 100% clean electricity. So some have been talked about, like extending, you know, tax credits for solar and wind energy. In the case of electric vehicles, there is $1 billion for zero emission heavy duty vehicles, including garbage trucks and school buses. This is a particularly good opportunity for local governments who might want to buy their first electric fire truck or their first electric garbage truck. We have covered on Up North News stories about how transit systems in Wisconsin are making that move to hybrid buses, if not all electric buses, again, in that effort to go carbon free. There are going to be more incentives in there for cities to do that. And in doing so, that's going to save taxpayer dollars at the local level when you don't have to fill up the buses and the garbage trucks and everything with gas all the time. So there are long range savings for, you know, the property tax bill that we all pay locally. The Inflation Reduction Act contains $3 billion to ensure the Postal Service replaces a significant portion of its fleet with clean electric mail trucks to be made by Wisconsin's own Oshkosh Corporation. The only question is, where will those trucks be built?
Not here. Not here, not according here to Oshkosh or Oshkosh's own U.S. Senator Ron Johnson,
who says, it's not like we don't have enough jobs here already, were his words when asked why he would not try to put any kind of pressure, influence, power of suggestion to Oshkosh to consider creating the jobs in their hometown rather than a state like South Carolina.
Right. And all of those words are appropriate to define that, but also just like your responsibility as a senator representing the state. Like it comes down to that before even saying, hey, being suggestive about it. It should just be advocating on behalf of your constituents, bringing those jobs here, because that is one heck of a re-election message. Just being like, nah, we're good. We got enough jobs. Don't worry about bringing those high paying jobs here.
Well, it really gets to the matter of trying to win an election by appealing to a base on purely ideological terms, talking about things like, you know, freedom and free markets and decrying your opponents as socialists, rather than actually getting to those bread and butter issues like, should you be chasing away jobs for Wisconsin or should you be attracting them? Should you be voting against a cap on insulin prices or should you help the people in your state who need insulin to live by supporting a cap on insulin prices? Those are the actual issues that we should be asking voters to consider. Voters instead are going to hear these just take what I've described so far about the climate provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act. These are tangible, real, individual benefits that come to Wisconsin or Wisconsin families, Wisconsin farmers, Wisconsin businesses. On the other side of the aisle will simply be that broad brush to say something like, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes wants to bring the Green New Deal to Washington, and you know, have whatever scary imagery they come up with to try to persuade you that things that can help the climate and help the economy are somehow bad, somehow some form of socialism. And I'm always thinking, well, what's the socialist angle to this? How is it that, you know, everybody is affected? I don't know. Everybody gets clean air. There's a thought. I could use clean air, clean water. I don't mind sharing that.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that you should want no matter what. But again, unfortunately, there's been some right-wing megaphones is probably the best way to put it, that have branded those things that way. And therefore, when Wisconsinites and voters around the country hear them, they do tend to have some knee-jerk reactions.
So we get back to the individual benefits. There is $20 billion in there to support climate smart ag practices, $5 billion for forest health, nearly $10 billion in USDA loans for rural electric cooperatives like Chippewa Valley Electric or Oconto Electric to help them acquire renewables and other carbon-free energy. All of this is to say that the Inflation Reduction Act, which again would not have been my choice of name, I would have stuck with Build Back Better, but it puts Wisconsin well positioned, says the Evergreen Collaborative, to be a key engine in America's transition to a clean energy future. Wisconsin leaders should capitalize on the opportunities presented by this bill, as well as the Bipartisan Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, to catalyze this transition in the years to come. In other words, opportunity has been laid at our door. Yes, we have paid for it. We have elected the leaders who are making that investment, and better we spend it there than on, say, you know, more political ads from billionaires. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow, back in our next hour.